Hello and welcome to the Go Home Show podcast. I'm Michael Henson and joining me as ever is the wonderful Chris Anderson for a review of NXT TakeOver 31. There's a lot to get through, so let's jump straight in. And we start with the news that the Capital Wrestling Center is going to be the home of NXT for the foreseeable future. Obviously, they've been at Full Sail recently and there were potential rumors about move to the Amway Center for this one. But this is a throwback to 1977, to the Capital Wrestling Corporation. A very nice intro to it, obviously. A quote from Vincent K. McMahon, shown on the screen from 1977 as well. And it's a tribute to the beginnings of WWE. It's like basically a smaller Thunderdome with fans. So it's good to see fans back in. And they've done this very nicely. Chris, what did you make of that?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Am I right? The fans that were in, the physical fans that were in, were they still just the NXT trainees, or were they actual?
I believe, going off what Triple H said in the pre-show, was that it was a mixture of
pre-show.
So they had a pre-show, but then they had a live at like 7 p.m.
our
time.
To the pre-show.
With Triple H explaining it, and I think he said that it was a mixture of family and friends, talent, and a small number of fans.
Nice, sweet. Yeah, it's good to see him back in. I think it worked nice. It created a good atmosphere for the whole show.
And then, yeah, we move into the opening contest, which was announced during the pre-show, which was Damian Priest versus Johnny Gargano for the North American Championship. Chris, what did you make of this match?
I thought this was a really, really good match. It was a very good opener. My assumption going into the evening was that they'd start with the cruiserweight match, because typically cruiserweight matches are the fastest matches.
Oh, hang on. That's a lie. That is a lie. In the preview show, you said the women's match was going to open the show.
Okay, yes, that's fine. I'm allowed to change my mind, though, Crush, so leave me alone. Yeah, but this match was very, very, very good. It was a good story between kind of Johnny Gargano's speed, athleticism, and Damian Priest's ability to like hit with the right hand out of nowhere. They also allowed Damian Priest to get in some of his athletic stuff to show that he could keep up with Johnny Gargano, but that Johnny was still the faster of the two. But Damian Priest's strikes, especially early on, were very, very good. It set the tone for the whole show very well, I thought. The finish was very good as well. I thought it was a nice idea for the finish, especially with both sides chasing their finisher throughout the match. Like, we see one final beat teased a lot throughout the match. We see Reckoning teased a lot, even on the outside at one point. I thought as a whole match, as a starter, this was a very, very good match and the perfect way to start what was a very good takeover.
Yeah, exactly. Just under 19 minutes for the whole match. And yeah, as Chris said, a very, very solid opener. Some very nice spots as well. There was a razor's edge onto the ring apron at one point and a tilt of world transitioned into the South of Heaven chokeslam. So yeah, a very, very nice match and moved into the second match of the night, which was the only non-title match of the night with Kushida taking on Velveteen Dream. I believe it was Kushida's first ever takeover appearance as well.
First, I think... Yeah, I think you're right. I was going to say maybe it's his first. It's definitely his first singles. I don't know if he's been in a multi-man, but I think you're right. They definitely said something about it. And if I'm honest, it's about time, regardless of whether it's his first overall or his first singles or whatever it is, because Kushida is so good. And I appreciate there's a lot of difference between coming from Japan to American wrestling, not just in terms of language, but also in terms of style and how the TV works and all that kind of thing. But he is so good, and I'm very excited to see that they're kind of letting him off the rein a little bit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, as Chris said, it's really nice to see Kushida getting the push. Obviously, we saw on NXT this week that he said it's going to be a new violent side, as we saw with the match with Tony Nese, and this is definitely a new Kushida because he was wrestling jeans for one, which big fan of. And both men paid tribute to Back to the Future with their looks for the match. Obviously, Kushida looking like Marty McFly and Dream looking like Doc Brown with the sort of spray-painted silver hair. It's on in the background now as I'm talking. And Kushida with his normal outfit. But again, a very good start to the match. Kushida ambushed Dream during his entrance to get the match started. Dream was so annoyed he threw a chair in, then the ref took it off Kushida and we eventually get into the match. There's obviously throwbacks to the Tony Nese match, stamps on the back of the neck and stamps on the front. Now he's trying to get into the hoverboard lock. But yeah, overall, a very good match. The finish, I think I really enjoyed the finish because Kushida locks in the hoverboard lock from the top rope. Then Dream makes his way to the bottom rope to break it. Kushida then rolls into the middle ring with it, still holding on. Dream manages to stand up, uses strength to get up, hits the Dream Valley Driver, and you're thinking, oh God, like what's going to happen next? He's still got hold of the hoverboard lock and picks up the win. And then we see this new Kushida as he attacks Dream after the belt, focusing on that left arm, which he's been targeting throughout the whole match. The refs are out to break it up, and then he gets up, and then bang, straight into the submission, and we see the true Kushida. And both of us predicted Kushida for this one, so a pat on the back for both of us.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is the story they're telling with Kushida is very, very good. I like the fact that he attacked him after the match. I found it hilarious that someone from the crowd shouted, "Do it again," after he broke about the third or fourth submission on him. This was very, very good. I think this is exactly the right thing to be doing with Kushida. I think it'd be interesting to see where they go with both of these. I would like to see Kushida in the title picture now, but let's see where they go from here.
Picking up a point that I noticed after this match is the commentary team, Chris. I don't know if you will have noticed it during the match.
I didn't notice it during this match. I noticed it more during a later match, which we'll go into. It was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, so like, I was watching it, I was like, that is Beth Phoenix talking, but it's not Beth Phoenix on the screen. It's like, I looked on Twitter and someone described it as 2015 Sasha Banks and Matt Stryker instead of Wade Barrett. So obviously Wade Barrett and Beth Phoenix were doing commentary alongside Vic Joseph. But then when the match was on,
they
weren't there. But there was no explanation for it. But then when I noticed it I also noticed it because when they cut into Vic Joseph for a pre-match segment to like build it up, they disappeared. And it was just...
It's on his own.
It was very weird. I thought I was hallucinating at 1:30 in the morning, whatever time it was. But yeah. Don't know why it happened.
I think Beth's been broadcasting from home.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I can assume is the Zoom calling in. Or whatever the better version of that is. I think my favourite bit about it was, like you said, 2015, Sasha Banks and BTEC Wade Barrett sat at commentary whilst Vic Joseph just slogs along during matches. I don't know why it was. It didn't affect the match anyway. I thought actually commentary was very, very good, especially Beth Phoenix. I think it's the best I've heard her on commentary. It was just a weird visual to have.
And then we move into a very, very exciting segment, which is very, 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 very exciting. And it was the Halloween Havoc, for the first time in 20 years, since 2000, will be returning to NXT on the 28th of October, hosted by Shotzi Blackheart. Are you looking forward to this one, Chris?
Yeah, I absolutely am. I think, like you said, it's just a cool little throwback to have. I like the idea that it's hosted by Shotzi Blackheart as well. Be very interested to see where they go with it. Obviously, it's only a month's worth of build for it. I'm excited. It's just good. It's good to have more wrestling, especially as we're kind of still in the transitional point where there's no fans, but they're doing their best to create atmosphere and create engaging content. I'm all for this. I think it's a good shout.
And then up next, we had Santos Escobar versus Isaiah Swerve Scott. So, Chris, I'll let you take this one, as I know you're looking forward to this match.
Yes, I was very excited for this match. And early on, I wasn't sure, because the first two matches were so good. And the shine that they built for Isaiah Swerve Scott, for me, didn't really give him the best opportunity to show everything he could do, especially in a cruiserweight match. We expected to be very fast. So the main part of him, his big offense early on, was he hit three dives to the outside. So he hit a moonsault from the apron. He then hit a corkscrew off the second rope to the outside, and then he hit a corkscrew over the top. Now, all of these were very, very impressive moves, but it was quite slow between each one, which kind of took away from each one. For me personally, when I see dives, I like them to be like quick hit moves, if that makes sense. They are the pinnacle of the babyface getting their shine in early on. However, as this match went along, this match got better and better and better. And I think for me personally, had the best finishing sequence of all five matches. Halfway through, we get the other members of Phantasma come out. I'm trying to remember this properly. Escobar ends up on the top rope. Scott cuts him off. The outside, the two members of Phantasma physically actually catch Escobar, put him on his feet, rub him down, send him back in. Then Ashanti Adonis comes out, evens the odds. This was a really, really cool moment in the match, because I didn't expect it, although you could kind of see how it was going to happen. Didn't expect it. I really thought this was going to be the straight finish and it was just going to be a distraction. Roll up by the heel, 1, 2, 3, we'll go home. And I was kind of like, oh, no. But they played it so well in that they showed that, and then gave both the individuals in the match the chance to shine out of it, I thought was a really, really well done spot.
Yeah, I mean, the two spots I want to talk about is the one early on. So when Escobar gets thrown to the outside for the first time, just before he gets hit with the corkscrew moonsault and then the up and over backflip to take him out again on the outside, as he goes around just before the corkscrew moonsault, he takes the cover off the turnbuckle, which obviously played a huge
part in that. Yes, very, very good point.
And the ending, which gets using that turnbuckle, but originally we had a rolling thunder flatliner into a kick. Then we have the Escobar Phantom driver, and Scott kicks out. He's the first ever person to kick out of that move. We have a Three Amigos from Escobar, a little throwback to Eddie Guerrero. Escobar misses the frog splash. We have the Scott House call into the 450 splash, 2.5 count, so close. Then we see the outside, Escobar pushes Scott back. It hits his head on the exposed turnbuckle, which was obviously from earlier in the match. Then we get a double underhooks, then insert the knee in a face to retain the title, and a very nice ending, Chris.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I hadn't forgotten about it, but I forgot it was so early on that we lose the turnbuckle cover. It was a really nice kind of example. It's like the Chekhov's gun kind of example where something happens early on and it just sits there and you're waiting for it and you're waiting for it and you're waiting for it. It was a really original idea to go into the finish, especially because it wasn't, when we say exposed turnbuckle, we always think of like the top turnbuckle cover, but actually it was literally just the pad on the, essentially the screw that puts it from turnbuckle into the post. It was a really well done thing. I like the idea of this double underhook knee to face being Escobar's new finish. Just because we've seen the, what's his old finish called? The Phantom Driver. We've seen that style of finish for a long time, and it kind of loses, and especially in cruiserweight matches, it loses its effectiveness, whereas a big jump, the big double underhook knee to face, I think works really well as a finish. I would also like to point out that I did call that he would retain, whereas Crush, who did you predict to win this match?
Yeah, I got this wrong.
Yeah, amateur hour. Although I will actually, having now seen the match, I will agree with you that I think Scott should have gone over, because it, with the heel winning, and it was such a good match with such an exciting finish. You even hear it at the end. When the three comes down, it is almost silence in there. It's just stunned silence. Whereas I think if Scott goes over, you'd have had a huge crescendo for the win. However, I did predict the win correctly, so I'm still going to take that. Which then moves us very nicely onto the women's match. Now, this for me, I'm not going to call this match of the night because I don't think it was. But this for me, from start to finish, at the very, very end of the final segment for the women's match, this was the most enjoyable match for the night for me, the most enjoyable segment of the night for me, because it had everything. It had incredibly talented athletes. It had some hilarious moments. It had comebacks. It had a really good promo. This, for me, was everything. Cross, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, we said this on the preview show that we thought it was going to be match of the night, but the main event did overshadow this when you see how good the main event is. But this match was extremely good in itself. Early on, Io Shirai is showing off her athleticism. You can tell LeRae's getting frustrated. We had lots and lots of back and forths. Shirai gets back on top with a stomp to the stomach. Then we have a 619 to a missile drop kick for a 2 count. LeRae goes...
Really, really good little bit. That was a great spot.
Yeah.
That whole spot went into there, finishing off with the missile drop kick. Off, it was like a springboard missile drop kick, and she got every inch of it. There was even a moment where you can kind of see her setting up for it, and you almost hear her saying, "Candace, come closer, come closer." Candace did not need to come closer because Candace took every inch of this to the face. It was a very, very... Sorry, I know I've interrupted you, Crush. Carry on. It was a really good spot.
Then we get Shirai going for the moonsault, but LeRae gets up and power bombs her, but Shirai not affecting her, straight up, and then double knees in the corner. We have the backstabber into a lion salt by LeRae, gets a near fall. Submission with Shirai getting to the rope. The ref counts, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Gets to 4, and LeRae like starts arguing, but she accidentally strikes him. Accidentally, in inverted commas. Then we get the air raid.
This is honestly the greatest section of wrestling ever. I'm so excited for this. From start to finish, I'm going to let you go, Crush. If you're listening to this, in fact, you must be listening to this because I've just said, when you're listening to this, just go and rewatch this if you have already seen it. Watch it if you've not seen it. This is the best section of professional wrestling ever. This will never get beaten.
So we get the air raid crash into a moonsault. LeRae gets her legs up and the ref gets fully knocked down this time. So it's a ref bump. So we get a pop for the ref bump. Then Lerae hits the Wicked Stepsister, which is where she gets the opponent face down, brings down on his back, and then stamps on the head. And then, this is what I think what Chris is referring to, we get Johnny Wrestling turned into Johnny Referee. So he's running down in his trunks, ref top on. He gets in, fast count, trying to get the three, and Shirai somehow kicks out. Gargano then gets to the outside to get the belt. The ref's up and like, what are you doing here? And like, there's a little bit of argument where...
Slide drop!
Yeah.
The slide drop of the belt is beautiful.
So then we get the slide drop of the belt. Gargano gives it to Lerae, who clocks Shirai fully. And then we somehow get a kick out from that. And then we hit the finish, which was a Spanish fly from the top rope into a moonsault to retain, and the second best match of the night. But then we had the reveal of the mystery superstar. And before that, someone very close to the UK fans, a returning Miss Toni Storm, Chris.
Yes, a really good promo as well. My only gripe I had with the promo was the go-home line at the end when she says, it will be and always will be Toni time. Can we drop Toni time? I did not like Toni time.
Toni time.
And the promo itself was really good, but Toni time, we can get rid of that.
No.
She doesn't need it. Toni Storm is so good. She We do not need a cliche Michael Cole catchphrase for her.
It's Toni time.
She's too good for that. She doesn't need it. She's very, very cool. But then, as we said, we got the returning superstar that I think we both hoped for.
Yeah.
There had been rumours that... may have been Chad Gable, the rumours of Bo Dallas. The right answer for this was Ember Moon. It was Ember Moon returning. You see her drive her motorbike all the way up to the doors of the CWC, come storming in, takes her time at the entrance as well, which I thought was a really nice job that she did. She could have like walked in, whipped off the helmet, but she let the crowd build a little bit. It was really, really well done. Very excited for Ember Moon to be back. Very excited for Toni Storm to be NXT. I think this does lead to the... It leads to the idea, especially with the draft coming up, that we may lose some women from the NXT division just because it is so stacked now with the amount of people like Candice LeRae, Io Shirai, Toni Storm, Ember Moon, Mercedes Martinez, Rhea Ripley, you could get a Shotzi Blackheart. You could go on. Like, there's just so many.
Two of the four horsewomen.
There's too many. Yeah, there's too many extremely talented women to be in one show and not all of them get enough time that they deserve. So I think my prediction, you predicted Candice LeRae, am I right in saying?
Yeah, either Candice LeRae or Rhea Ripley now thinking about it, because I said on the main podcast about Rhea Ripley going to Raw.
I wouldn't be surprised to see both, if I'm honest. I don't know where Candice goes from this, especially with Johnny not winning the title as well. I think we might actually see both of them drafted to somewhere. But I do think Rhea Ripley is my... I feel very confident that Rhea Ripley will go over, because she's booked so strong in NXT, but she's not really around the title picture. So that just feels to me that they're building her up to move her over to Raw or to SmackDown, especially with her match at WrestleMania with Charlotte. She already has that main event. Sorry, she already has that main roster feel to her. So I would not be shocked to see her get drafted across one way or the other come the end of this week.
And then we get onto the main event, which was the show stealer, which was the match of the night, which could potentially be a match of the year candidate. Finn Balor versus Kyle O'Reilly. Chris, I know you want to talk about this, so take it away.
Yeah, this was exactly what we hoped for, or exactly what I hoped for. It was two guys literally kicking the teeth out of each other for half an hour. It was very, very good technical wrestling early on. You could see that it was a very Japanese style of wrestling, I think, where they show the technical stuff early, but then there are big strikes that come in. We see Finn especially hitting some big chops early on. Kyle O'Reilly started by working the arm, which was interesting because obviously Kyle O'Reilly is most known for his heel hook and his knee bar finishes. Starts with working the arm. It goes back and forth for a long time. Eventually, Finn takes control, as you'd expect, with what might be one of the cleanest, stiffest drop kicks to the face I think we've seen, probably since Io Shirai in all fairness, the match beforehand. But he rolls back through. Kyle O'Reilly sits up and Finn Balor hits every inch of this dropkick clean to the face. And now, usually, WWE will avoid showing overly stiff parts of matches. Or what they'll do is they'll show the slow-motion replay up to the point of impact, and then they'll speed through it so you don't quite see it in all its glory. This one, they showed slow motion the whole way through as Finn Balor put both his feet through the face of Kyle O'Reilly. It was a really good cutoff. It worked perfectly in the sense of this is now Finn Balor's match. He's in total control. We do see a lot of moments of Kyle O'Reilly kind of bringing his way back, especially the way that Kyle O'Reilly wrestles, which is very kind of orientated and limb manipulation oriented, where he can get a couple of shots in that mean something to the match without actually taking away the fact that Finn Balor was in control. We saw O'Reilly get a heel hook in, which was beautifully countered into a sharpshooter. And with blood pouring out of Kyle O'Reilly's mouth, gave this really good visual shot of Kyle O'Reilly scraping and clawing and pulling his way to the rope with blood kind of trickling out of his mouth. You see the expression change of like grit and determination coming to his face. I saw a really good comment the other day, which was the idea that people lose the fact that being a babyface isn't about no selling anything, especially in America, no selling and just like wiping off pain. It's fighting through pain, and that, and this was beautifully done. The big moment in the match was Finn Balor hit, it was just a standing back kick to the gut of Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly sold this beautifully as almost like a knockout liver shot. For those who might, I'm actually showing my age here a little bit. Ricky Hatton hit a beautiful knockout punch once where he gut punched someone and they just collapsed the floor. It was that idea. Kyle O'Reilly started to pull back from forearm to the next and immediately dropped down, hands up to back off, all that kind of stuff. From there on, the story of the match is Finn Balor working the liver, essentially, of Kyle O'Reilly, and Kyle O'Reilly working the leg of Finn Balor, and that battle back and forth, back and forth. It was a full war of attrition. As we get towards the end of the match, German suplex from Kyle O'Reilly into a double stop from Finn Balor. It's the finish, I think, is my only gripe with this match, and not because it was the wrong finish. It was absolutely brilliantly done. It was perhaps just a little bit too slow. I think it needed one more moment of Kyle O'Reilly perhaps being there. We think maybe like Finn Balor goes for one more coup de grace. Goes for a coup de grace. Kyle O'Reilly manages to move himself and take the leg into another knee bar, and then Finn Balor hits one last drop kick or one last sling blade or whatever it is to drop him up for the coup de grace. Go home. However, as a match, we always say that we always have one match we recommend you watch. For me personally, just watch the whole takeover. This might be, in my opinion, the best takeover for a long time, and that's not me disparaging older takeovers, but usually what you get with takeovers, you get one insane match, one or two very good matches, and then two matches that are good. This, for me, had four excellent matches, all of which told a different story, and a main event that was a true main event and a true kind of banger that you would expect from takeover. However, the 1-2-3 wasn't the end of proceedings, was it, Crush?
No, it wasn't. We had our very own, UK-owned former rugby league player, Ridge Holland, make an appearance. You think it's going to be end because both men are in the middle of the ring. They're shaking hands. Yeah. You're thinking, solid end, solid end. We didn't get your prediction, but you did manage to predict all five matches right. So a round of applause for Chris, please, if you're listening from home. He's done excellent there. And then we get to the end. Ridge Holland appears outside of the ring with Adam Cole, very badly beaten Adam Cole, shirts ripped open, hairs everywhere, and he just dumps him ringside. And then you see Undisputed Era rush out, and you're like, they're like, what's going on here? And that's how the show finishes. So I'm really looking forward to see where they take this now.
Can I just very quickly say, my favourite thing of this was, they all rush out. Bobby Fish asks Finn Balor if he'd seen anything. Finn Balor has been beating snot out of Kyle O'Reilly for half an hour, and almost like an Among Us emergency meeting, they're like, yeah, but Finn Balor kind of sus. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it was really well done. I like the idea. I did not see Ridge Holland being what was next for, I assume, Undisputed Era and probably Adam Cole. But I really like the idea. We did hear probably a month or two ago that WWE were very, very, very hot on Ridge Holland and they really liked him. Obviously, he had that match with Johnny Gargano where there was a big botch during the match. For me, that botch actually was as equal blame on both sides. I think it just wasn't. Both sides were expecting more from the other side, if that makes sense. But I'm really glad we're seeing Ridge Holland, who is a ridiculous athlete. This is the right decision for me, especially with Karrion Kross out injured. Let's give him a proper push. And I think down the line, the big, perhaps even Mania showcase will be Karrion Kross versus Ridge Holland in a big, big boy, battering, bruising main event. But for me, this was probably the best 2.5 hours of wrestling we've seen in a good long while.
Yeah, I agree. A very, very enjoyable takeover up until I think it was about 2:30 this morning. So yeah, it was a late one, but I really enjoyed it. That's all we have time for today. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure to leave a review of the podcast if you've enjoyed it. Follow us on Twitter at Go Home Show Pod and check us out on YouTube, Sport Wrestling, for all our interviews and mini segments from the main podcast. Speaking of that podcast, we brought our latest one out on last Thursday, where we talked the best WWE game of all time, Dolph Ziggler as the new champion's number one contender, and much more, as well as number one contender for the NXT UK Championship, Ilya Dragunov, dropping by for a chat. Thanks for tuning in. Let's go home.